All right, morning people. Today's daf is Chav Zayin in Nida. We're still in the third perek of Masechta Nida. We'll be here some time. We've been here some time. We will be here some time. It is a lengthy perek. Wow. Okay, all the way up to and through Lamed Aleph. Okay, and the third perek is about Leida. It's about Leida, specifically about Tumas Leida, a woman giving birth. And as a result of that, she's going to be Tamei, or more accurately, Tameya. And the Mishnayos have been discussing various permutations and, quite honestly, some deformities in terms of the actual birth and how to treat that and how to exactly categorize each one of these different types of births. So in the Mishnah, going all the way back to Chavdal, we talked about a woman giving birth to a spear. It was an amniotic sac, but it was filled not with a baby, it was filled with liquids, blood, water, or other liquids. Mishnah then went on to discuss the being mapil sandal, giving birth to a sandal. Sandal is a crushed fetus, crushed by its sibling twin inside of it, and that ensued a lengthy discussion that took us to Daf Chavav. Yesterday's daf, we talked about the shulia. We talked about the placenta and a woman giving birth to a placenta, and to which we continue with today in terms of describing what would be the status of a woman giving birth to a placenta. Now, of course, as the Mishnah itself acknowledges, the placenta is not a baby. The placenta is simply the afterbirth. It's things that come out of the woman after the baby is born. And how do we treat this placenta? So the Mishnah brings down a machlokas. Now, the Mishnah, it's interesting. The Mishnah over here is not really talking about the woman. The Mishnah is much more interested in the discussion about what's the status of the house. Not the house, really, as I mentioned yesterday, but the contents of the house. Meaning, is the house going to be Tamei Meis or not Tamei Meis? So, as we learn back in the Mishnah, we'll talk more about this today. I just want to quickly review. The Mishnah says, Shulya Babai, Sabai is Tamei. That if you find a placenta in the house is Tamei. Lo Sheha Shulya Vlad, not because the placenta itself is a fetus, El Shein Shulya Blo Vlad. But it's a simen, as we described yesterday. Meaning, the placenta is an excellent indication that there was a fetus. Where is the fetus right now? We don't know. We don't see it. But the Tanna Kamma says, but it was there, and because it was there, anything in the house is going to be tummy with Tumas Meis. Meaning, to be clear about this, that means that after the birth, there was a fetus postpartum, and obviously the fetus is not alive. And so that means now that the Tumma goes from the fetus up to the roof, spreads over the roof, drops down, and makes everything in the house tummy. That's the opinion of the Tanna Kamma. Why can't we find the fetus right now? Because it disintegrated. But the Tanna Kamma is of the opinion that it dissolved, disintegrated postpartum, after the baby comes out of the mother. And to that's what Rabbi Shimon disagrees with. Rabbi Shimon Omer, Nima Kavlada Shalo Yetze. Rabbi Shimon says, no, the disintegration of the fetus took place in utero. And it only comes out, in its disintegrated form, in its dissolved form, therefore it's not going to give off any tumor. Okay, so that's the machlokas in the Mishnah between the Tanna Kamma and Rabbi Shimon. Yesterday we spent nearly the entire day talking about is there an allowable gap between a birth of a baby and its placenta? And you know, we consulted yesterday with our medical experts, and it's not really documented. Meaning, we don't have nowadays any real. I'm not researched on the matter. I didn't fully research it. I interviewed a couple of doctors yesterday, but Bismanena, we don't have this. We don't have a real gap between the birth and the placenta. They come one after the other. The baby followed by them by the placenta. So it's kind of hard to really hear when the Gemara says that there's a 3-day gap between them. Kenishtana teva. Okay, it could be that they were operating with a different world than what we operate with, and that's simply how you're going to have to understand the Gemara. But that's what we talked about yesterday. We're on the bottom of Chavav. Okay, today's daf is daf Chav Zayin.
Excuse me, does Shimon basically say there is no mace without a birth?
No, he acknowledges there was a baby.
Which means the baby was born, and then it died.
But only
after it was delivered.
No, Rabbi Shimon says the baby died in utero.
And died in utero?
Right. And not only did it die in utero, but dissolved in utero, and got mixed in with all the other juices.
Right.
That's Rabbi Shimon. And the Chachamim say no. That the first thing that happens is that the baby came out somewhat intact, and then dissolved after.
The Chachamim say there's no mace with that.
They both acknowledge there was a baby. It's just a question of when did the baby dissolve.
Let's say the baby comes out dead.
If the baby comes out dead, that's sure. That'll be tamei meis. Absolutely. Absolutely. Okay. All right, that's what we're up to so far. Just a simple review of what we're talking about for the past couple of days. We are continuing. It's about 6-7 lines from the bottom of the Amud on Chavav Amud Beis. The following question was posed. Question asked to Rabbi, as in Rabbi Yudarasi. Hamapelsim was Ore Vishil Yamahu. Okay, a woman gives birth to something that looks like a raven. Okay, we've been talking about this since the beginning of the Perek. So, strange, but, we've been here, done that. So a woman gives birth to something that looks like a raven. It's obviously mutated, it's deformed, and it has a placenta. Okay, now, we talked about this yesterday. If this placenta cannot be associated with this baby, obviously that means that this placenta must have had been connected with another baby. There had to have been another baby inside. So this is what we talked about a little bit yesterday. We're going to continue with this today. Here we have raven and placenta. So can we associate the two? Now, if we can't associate the two, remember we said this yesterday, if we can't associate the two, that means that we're accounting now for another baby. And remember, that leads to a lot of issues because that other baby could be male, it could be female. She'll have to count Tumah Tahara L'Chumrah based on the fact that it may be male, it may have been female. It also may upset her days in terms of when she starts counting. Okay, right, it creates a lot of complication. So it's much more advantageous to say that we can connect this placenta with this baby. So can we do that over here when the baby A comes out deformed, B looks like a raven? So now, Amalei ain't told.
Similar.
Not this question. So Amalei ain't told. And the Gemara says, no, you can't be told that because. Okay. In other words, if it looks like a raven, let's treat it like a raven. I know that's strange, but ravens don't have a placenta, meaning that's just simply the nature of a bird. A bird does not have a placenta. A bird is born inside of an egg, in other words, and it's an entirely different fetal development, and it does not have a placenta. So to which the Gemara now says, so you can't do that. You can't associate a placenta with a deformed baby that looks like a bird when birds in general don't have placentas. So kshurbo mahu. So, but the questioning continues and says, "But what if you actually see them connected? What if you see a physical connection between this mutated fetus that looks like a bird and the placenta that comes out with it?" So amalei davar she'eino she'alta. To which Rebbe says, "No, it's not. It's you're asking me something that can't happen. It simply can't happen. All right, Eisve." The Gemara challenges. And this is a Braisa, and the Braisa says a woman had a miscarriage, and what comes out is something that looks like either an animal or a bird, and there's a placenta. And now watch what the Braisa does. And the Braisa says if the placenta and this mutated baby are actually physically connected, if they are kashur, if they're tied together, so then you can associate baby with feet, with placenta. And if they're not connected, you have to account for the fact that there may have been another baby. Okay. And you have to take on the chumrah of that other baby, which may have been a male, which may have been a female, and it leads to all the things that we talked about. Shani Omer, Shem Nimoch, Spear Shal Shaya, Vinimoch, Shaya Shal Spear. And the Braisa just simply points out what we have to be concerned with. This placenta belongs to another baby, the other baby dissolved, and this baby had another placenta, and this placenta dissolved. Okay, so in other words, it was a twin birthing, and all we got to see was one of the babies, and we didn't see the other baby. In other words, so to which Rebbe said it's impossible, the Braisa says it is possible, Tiyufta. To which the Gemara says, Tiyufta, that's going to be a challenge. Rashi's gear says, Tiyufta de Rebbe. That's a difficulty to Rebbe, and we're going to just simply shut the case on this. It is interesting because we're questioning Rebbe based on a Braisa. In other words, right, Rebbe's a Tana. Rebbe, And usually, if Rebbe has a Mishnah, the Mishnah beats the Braisa. So it is interesting that the Gemara checkmates Rebbe with a Braisa. Right? Just struck. You know, okay. No, it's an observation. I don't know. I haven't seen anyone discuss it, but okay.
No, if you say it's not connected, then what is it? I mean, it's not a child.
Again, that goes back to the beginning of the parak. The beginning of the parak, we had a machlokus whether we treat it like a child or not. Now lamaisa, we don't. Meaning la halacha, we don't. But Rabbi Meir says it is that we do. I understand. It's strange. Amar Rabba Baba Shila Amar Rav Masna Amar Shmuel Maisa Vitalos Ashilia Bavada Sar Yamin. Okay? 10-day gap between the baby and the Shilia, and we were Tola. We connected the two, meaning so that we didn't concern ourselves with the fact that, wow, placenta is coming out 10 days later? Maybe this placenta belongs to another baby. So the Gemara quotes in the name of Shmuel, Maisa Vitalo, meaning this happened, 10-day gap, and we associated the two. V'lo amru tola nela b'shul yabach ravlat. But you have to have specifically the order of first baby, then placenta. So if you have first baby and then placenta, and the baby is a viable baby, and the placenta comes out later, and even 10 days later, and you can associate the two. No, not the reverse. And the Gemara goes even further, meaning there was once a time where it was a 23-day gap between the two. So Amalei Rav Yosef, Ad Chadalet, Amartla, and Rav Yosef says, do you remember that you told us 24? Why are you saying now 23? When I specifically remember that you told us 24. Okay, so it was either 23 or 24 days. It's interesting that Rav Yosef is correcting. Remember, Rav Yosef lost his memory at one point over the course of his life. Could be that this was connected with that, but that's just speculation on my part. There was once a time where there were two babies being born. We're not talking now about baby and its placenta. We're not talking about a birth of twins, and they were 33 days apart from one another. And Amalei Rav Yosef, Lamadala Martlan, Rav Yosef says, no, Lamadala Martlan, you told us not 33, but rather 34. Okay? Again, I'm not the doctor, as everyone here knows. I'm a Rebbe by profession, but I don't know of any documented case where twin babies were born that far apart from one another. We could talk in terms of minutes. I also have personal experience. I mean, you know, I've done it twice in my life where I've fathered twins, but okay, it's...
They're 3 months apart.
They're talking now about 33, 34 days apart, where the babies were born. Okay.
So there's maybe a possibility between a 7-month delivery for the first one?
Correct. I understand. Right. The Gemara is going to go through how this is possible in terms of, you know, what was known to them about gestation periods. I'm just saying, practically speaking, when one twin is born, you know, The uterus is pushing, so the other one's going to come out as well. All right. The Gemara continues. Hani chalaman dam ayolas letishiolas mukutai mishkachala echa nigmar etzrasa l'sof shiva v'echa nigmar etzrasa letchilas tisha. Okay. So the Gemara says, look, getting to the number 33, 34, it's possible because remember there are two gestation periods that are acceptable b'zman haGemara. One is a 7-month gestation period, and the other is a 9-month gestation period. We've talked about this so many times that there is no 8-month gestation period. It just simply does not exist. The baby cannot be a viable baby, and the Gemara here is referring to where the twins were born, both of them being viable. So the only thing that we can have a discussion about for 33 or 34 days is having one baby born during the 7-month gestation and the other one being born during the 9. And even when we say 9 months, there's a debate. I know there's a funny thing to debate, but there's a debate whether you could be born in the beginning of the 9 month, or once you go full term, you can only be born at the end of the 9-month period. Okay, that's not your typical machlokas that's found in the Gemara. Usually, we're arguing about svara and reason and logic. Okay, but this is up for debate. So, if you hold that you can give birth in the beginning of the 9th month, so then We can easily account for a 33-day discrepancy. One's born at the end of seven, the other was born at the beginning of the nine. But there is an opinion in the Gemara that when you go full term 9 months, it has to be a full 9 months. So that means then that 33, 34 days, no. It's at the end of the seventh month, at the end of the 9 month, you're talking about somewhere in the park, a ballpark of 60-day discrepancy. So if that's so, so then how do you get to the number 33? It's impossible to get to the number 33. My ikla meimar. So the Gemara says, so what we're going to do is the following. Epech shmaitata, lama gimel ashir, yachav gimel ovlad. So what we're going to do is we're going to take the same story and just flip the numbers so that it would be 33 days, which was the time that lapsed between the birth of the baby and the placenta, and 23 days was the number of days that elapsed from the birth of one twin sibling, from one child and its twin. Now, 23 days, that we can handle. We could stomach that. No pun intended. But it's doable. Because in the 7 month, everyone agrees that by the 7 month, it could be anywhere in the 7th month. So you can have one twin born in the beginning of the 7th month and one twin born at the end of the 7th month. And that's simply how we would orchestrate it. Okay. Am Rabbi Avin bar Rav Ada Amar Rav Menachem Ish Kvar Sha'arim Va'amar La Beis Sha'arim Maisa V'nisha V'lad Achar Echad Achar Chaver Gimel Chadashim. I have the following anecdote. I've seen twins born 3 months apart from one another. V'arehem Yoshvim Lefanenu Be'Beis Medrash. And, right, much like Chanuch Teller said yesterday, he's right here in this Beis Medrash, although yesterday he said it as a joke. Today, he said it literally. In other words, they're right here in the Beis Medrash. Omanenu Yehuda v'Chizkiya b'nei Rabbi Chiya. In other words, then he pointed to the twin brothers of Yehuda and Chizkiya, who are the sons of Rabbi Chiya, and they were born 3 months apart. Now, as Rashi points out, the Gemara now has a Havamina. The Gemara thinks that they were conceived at different times, which the Gemara is about to acknowledge that's impossible. Meaning, once a woman is conceived, she is no longer open to conceive again. So, in the Havamina, the Gemara thinks that we're conceiving at two different points. Amar Abaye, so Abaye explains, no, tipa achas haisa, v'nitzchalkel ishtam, there was a tipa and it divided to two. It's rather remarkable. In other words, our understanding of how twins develop pretty much work in this kind of structure. So and it's just a question of gestation period, where one was fully gestated at the beginning of the 7th month, one was only gestated later at the end of the 9th month, and so that's how we account for a 3 month discrepancy between baby one and baby number two. Okay, in terms of them being born at two different points, so for us it's hard to understand, because once the uterus is pushing, that's it. The uterus doesn't take a break. But okay, that's how we understand the world around us. But we could simply say Nishtana Hateva, things have simply changed. Tana Rabbanan. We are continuing now. We're going back to our Mishnah. Shilya Babais Abais Tamilosha Shir Vlad El Shane Shilya Shain Vlad Ima Divre Abi Meir. So here we're quoting a Bryce, that's the Tosefta, and it's basically what we saw in the Mishnah. And the only difference over here is just assignment, meaning who said this. So in our Mishnah, what is the opinion of the Tanakhama? In this Braisa, it's the same opinion. It's just, there's a name now behind this opinion, and the name is Rabbi Meir. Okay? So the first opinion of the Mishnah is Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Yosef, Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Shimon, Mitarin. So we have then the opinion. In our Mishnah, it's only brought to us in the name of Rabbi Shimon. In the Tosefta, it comes to us as Rabbi Shimon plus Rabbi Yossi and Rabbi Yehuda. They say it's Tahor. Amru lo le Rabbi Meir. And in this Tosefta, what do we get? Dialogue. So they say to Rabbi Meir, Yatamodeshi Motziya b'seifel abeis chiton shu Tahor. Let me ask you the following question. Take the bowl, meaning whatever came out of this woman's body, that spilled into the bowl. Now remember, at this point in time now, we're postpartum. Do we see the baby? No, we don't. We are all acknowledging that there is no baby. We don't see the baby. So somewhere mixed in this bowl, the contents of the bowl, is a dissolved baby, Rahman al-Slan. But there's a dissolved baby in the bowl. And the placenta we do see. So in other words, we know that there was a baby. So let me ask you now a question. This is now all the Tanaim, Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Yossi, and Rabbi Shimon all attacking Rabbi Meir. If I took this bowl and walked into another house with this bowl and simply just dropped it on the floor or laid it down on the floor, is the second house Tameh? No. No, because there's no baby. It's a design. So what they're going to ask now is, you agree with me that if I take this bowl and move it to another house and just simply place it down in another house, you agree with me that second house is not going to become Tameh, for the simple reason is there is no baby inside the bowl. There may be the remains of a baby, but that remains is dissolved. It's liquefied. So you agree with me. So what's the difference between house number two and house number one? Good, good. That's a kasha. So Rabbi Meir, Rabbi Yosef, Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Shimon. Amar lo Rabbi Meir, yeta modeshi mehotzi b'sefel abeis achitzon shutar. Amar lahem, so Rabbi Meir says in response, aval. And you know what the word aval means, right? Yes, but. It comes up all the time. Aval, yes, but. Meaning, yes, I agree with you, but I think there's a difference. V'lama lefisha eino, I'm sorry, v'lama lefisha eino. So, but he argues, yeah, but now in house number two, the baby's no longer there. It's no longer intact. It's dissolved. So they say to Rabbi Meir, okay, but so wait a second. Let's take your argument and let's just develop it one step further. Or in this case, one step backwards. Meaning just like in house number two, you're acknowledging the baby's not there. It's dissolved. So in house number one, the baby's not there. It's dissolved. So Amar Lehen, so he says in his defense, Einodom Nimuk Pamachas Lenimuk Beis Pamim. There's dissolved and then there's dissolved. You understand? There's dissolved and then there's dissolved. Meaning when the baby comes out of the mother in house number one, so at that point in time there are still going to be pieces of the baby, of this miscarried baby. So there will be enough pieces, human remains, where it's going to give off Tamasohel. By the time you're moving it to house number two, it's totally dissolved, so that's not going to give off any more Tumas Meis. Okay? It seems to be that they're having a Machlokas and Metzius. It seems to be that way. Again, we always like to avoid that. We always like to give more Svara behind the Machlokas, but it's what seems to be going on. Okay. Yosef, good. That's the Tosefta, and so the Tosefta gave us more dialogue between Rabbi Meir versus the other Tanayim.
How is that Shimon so sure that he would say, yeah, I agree that the second half is still alive? Why did he assume that?
Because we're acknowledging we don't know. The baby's not there anymore.
I understand, but if they say the first one and the baby's not there either, why would they assume that the second one would... I don't understand why... You agree with us, right? He should have asked the question. Do you agree or not?
No, I guess, in other words, going into any debate, we're arguing over a specific point. You know where the points of agreement are. They knew that Rabbi Meir would be. They knew that. Yosef Papa Achari de Rabbi Bikamei de Rav Amnuna v'Yosef Bikamer. So the Gemara now describes a scene in the Beis Medrash. This is a typical scene in the Beis Medrash where Rav Papa is sitting, and he's sitting behind Rabbi, and they're both now hearing shir from Rav Hamanuna. V'Yosef Bikamer. Now Rav Papa makes the following declaration: My time at the Rabbi Shimon. Let's try to understand Rabbi Shimon. What's behind Rabbi Shimon? So Kasever Kol Tumash and Isar Ba Mimenacher Batla. So he wants to give a svara. And we're familiar with the svara because we saw this in Rashi yesterday. But that's Rashi explaining the Mishnah. And now we get to see the Gemara actually inside. And the svara is very simple. Bittul. Meaning, I have now, this woman gave birth. And Rachman Laslan, the baby didn't survive. And not only did the baby not survive, but the baby is no longer even in a physical state. In a solid state. The baby is so dissolved and disintegrated where basically it comes out liquefied. And so now what you have in a bowl is the remains of the baby in its liquid state plus all the other juices and bloods that come out together with the birth. And so, in explanation to Rabbi Shimon, the Gemara says, bittul. In other words, the baby has been nullified. It's what we would call bittul barov. Now, Amalahu Rav Papa, Hainu Nami Tamayu Rav Yehuda Rav Yosi. Now, they say to Rav Papa, look, what a nice explanation. You know, I guess there's a little bit of sarcasm over there. But why are you only explaining Rabbi Shimon? Why don't you use this to explain also the opinions of Rabbi Yosi and Rabbi Yehuda? Now, it's interesting because in our Mishnah, as it's presented to us, it's only the opinion of Rabbi Shimon. So it could very well be that Rabbi Papa is just explaining our Mishnah and is not really right now focusing on this Tosefta that we just learned together. But, in other words, you got to look at how the Gemara presents this information. The Gemara introduces this whole discussion with the Tosefta. So it was apparent that they knew the Tosefta. And being that they knew the Tosefta, they knew that this is the opinion not just of Rabbi Shimon, but also of Rabbi Yosi and Rabbi Yehuda. And so it is then odd, and they're calling him out on this. It's odd that you're just explaining Rabbi Shimon as if like Rabbi Yosi and Rabbi Yehuda don't exist. And achichu aleha. Mishna, and they make fun of Rav Papa, meaning Rav Papa, why are you only pointing out Rabbi Shimon, and they didn't understand the difference. So pshita, so Am Rav Papa afilu ki hamilsa lema inish. Now Rav Papa says, even if you're about to say something, and even though you're going to be ridiculed, you should say it anyway, right? In Mishnah Pirkei Avos, we say it in other terms, ain't a baishan lomade. Right? In other words, you're not going to learn if you're not prepared to be embarrassed. In other words, be prepared to be embarrassed. It's okay. Right? I do it daily. It's fine. It's totally okay. V'lo nishta kamei rabbe. And even though you're sitting in front of your rabbi, and even though your rabbi's going to ridicule you, say it anyway. It's the way you're going to learn. Mishum shenemar navalt bis nasei vim zamos yad lepeh. Im Navalta, Pasuk and Mishle, the Gemara understands it like this. Im Navalta beis nasei. If you're ready to make yourself a nevela, right? Something, nevela is something which is disgusting and a carcass, and, right? If you're ready to do that to yourself, so beis nasei, ultimately you're going to be elevated. Because by embarrassing yourself, you're going to then learn, and you're going to ask questions, and you may even get made fun of, but that's fine. Because ultimately you're going to be elevated. The imzamos, however, if you're quiet and you're not ready to embarrass yourself, yad lepeh. Ultimately, someone's going to ask you a question and you're not going to know what to answer, and you're going to put your mouth right over your hand, right over your, sorry, you're going to put your hand right over your mouth because you're not going to know how to answer. Okay. And so good. And so now that's fine. It's a strange sequence of Rav Papa, and they made fun of Rav Papa, and the Gemara teaching us a lesson, good, it's okay. You say something, and it's not the smartest thing, and it's subject to ridicule, and that's fine. Say it anyway. Good.
You give us permission?
I give myself permission. Before I start with you, I'll start with me. So, okay. Next. The Gemara now is going to string together Rabbi Shimon's, meaning we just learned that according to Rabbi Shimon, the baby comes out dissolved, and so therefore the baby does not give off tuma, and the reason behind Rabbi Shimon is bitl berov, because it's mixed in with a whole bunch of other juices, and so therefore we use the concept of bitl berov. We're going to string together Rabbi Shimon together with Rabbi Shimon. D'tanya will enter the following braisa, four lines from the bottom. Malotar v'drekiv shenafal asocho afar kol shehu tamev Rabbi Shimon mitahir. Okay, now this is a strange halacha. I don't know how else to describe this other than being strange. We're going to be spending more or less the remainder of today talking about the halacha of malotar v'drekiv. Okay, let me just give a quick introduction. A body gives off tumas ol. How? So the your basic choices are going to be where you either have flesh, right, human remains of the flesh, kezayis min hameis, or you have the entire bone structure, right, rov minyan or rov binyan, right, of the however number you want to use, 206, 248, whatever number you're comfortable with. In other words, if you have the majority of the bones, or if you have the majority of the skeletal structure of the human body, it's going to give off tumas ohal. If you don't have either of those, it doesn't give off tumas ohal. Right? That means if you have a little piece of bone of human remains, just one bone, So it's not going to give off tumas olah. You touch it, you're going to become tameh. You carry it, you're going to become tameh. But if you're under the same roof as just one bone, that does not give off tumas olah. Right? Okay. So you need either actual flesh, kezayis min hameis, and not just flesh, but you need a full kezayis of it, or you need the full skeletal structure. Okay, or the majority of the skeletal structure. There's one other way to transmit tumas ohel, and that is the following. It's what's called malo tarvad, a spoonful, a full spoonful of human remains. Now, what exactly does that mean? So we're going to give the following scenario. Now, I know this is going to sound strange, but I'll say it anyway, because this is essentially what the Gemara is going to point out. That if you have a body disintegrate, but it can only be the human body disintegrating with no additives, not even, and I know this is strange, not even clothing. In other words, you need just the decomposition of the body and nothing else. And it decomposes, and over the course of time, it basically reduces to dust, right? I call it ashes. We're not talking about the burnt body. We're just talking about a body decomposing over time. So now it's just ashes. You're right. If you want to have that picture of that mummy, you know, where it's just ashes, and then you fill a spoonful with those ashes. That spoonful of ashes is what's called malo tarvad, right? A full spoonful. That gives off tumas ohel. Where does this come from? So Rashi tells us halacha l'moshe mitzvinai, meaning you're not going to find this in Pesukim. This is not. This is just simply halacha l'moshe mitzvinai. You take a look at Rashi. Rashi says rekev rak vivis. It's like about 6-7 lines from the bottom of Rashi. Rak vivis shalmeis v'zeh shiura l'tame ba'ohel halacha l'moshe mitzvinai. Okay, this is just simply halacha l'moshe mitzvinai. Now, do I find this strange? Sure I do. Meaning, we know that when you bury a body, you're supposed to inter the body into the ground. So, how are you getting to this scenario where the body is just simply left to decompose without being buried in the ground, and there's simply no other additives, you're not even dressing the body into achrichin? Meaning, you know, as a member of the chevra, it's strange to understand how we got here, right? It's just strange.
But in those days, they bury the body, and then
But even back in those days, they did bury the body.
But in doing any sort of case, okay,
you check them too early. Oh, okay, right, and I know their minhagim, a burial was different than our minhagim. Okay, certainly. Just from what we know in terms of what is quote unquote normal burial for us, it's okay. I'm acknowledging that it's hard to imagine. But anyway, good. That's the halacha of malo tarvad rekev. A spoonful of disintegrated human matter. I don't even have a good way to express it. Correct. Now, and as I just explained, it gives off to masohal. So now we have the following braisa. And the braisa reads like this: if I have malo tarvad rekev, and a little bit of dirt was thrown into the spoon, not even a lot, just a little bit, afar kol shehu, so the Tanakhama says it's still going to give off tumah. And Rabbi Shimon says, no, it's no longer going to give off tumah, it's tahor. Okay? And my taima de Rabbi Shimon, and what's behind Rabbi Shimon? Meaning, what's going on over here? So, Amar Rava Ashkechasin la Rabbanan de Bei Rav the Yasvi the Kamri. So I went to the yeshiva, says Rava, and I heard the Bnei Yeshiva talking. VeKamri Efsha Shalo Yirbush they prayed to Zafar. I'll pray to Acha Shorekev VeChasur Le. So I heard them offer the following explanation. Look, let's now take our microscope. Let's take a look at this from a particle standpoint. Meaning, if we can, let's now take a close-up, a real close-up view of now the human remains, which is now reduced to dust, and I throw on a little bit of dirt, just a little bit of dirt right on top of it. What's going to happen is, if I take out my microscope, I'm going to see basically one particle of human remains being flanked by two particles of dirt. So if I could just isolate that one scene, so now what do I have? nothing more than my classic, right? Three hot dogs, two of them being kosher and one of them not being kosher, meaning bittul. And because I nullified that one particle, so I've reduced the shear. Meaning, in order for this spoonful to be tameh, it needs to be a totality of human remains. And because I sprinkled on a couple of pieces of dirt, and because now the two dirts surrounding the one human particle remains is going to nullify that, I've minimized the shear. Okay? It's somewhat, right? It diminished the shear. Okay. That is their explanation in the yeshiva. Now, when I heard that explanation of the base measures, so I said, Adaraba, you can really go the other way. Meaning, your argument that you just proposed, I could go the absolutely other way. Meaning, all I need to do is just take that microscope and just move it over just a little bit. Because what you're going to find is two human remains particle surrounding a piece of dirt. And can we now argue the other way, where the dirt becomes batel, where the identity of the dirt basically takes on the identity of the human remains? And so therefore, I could look at this just the same thing, just moving the microscope over just a little bit, and we can go the other way. And not only do I have now Malo Tarvad, I actually have more than Malo Tarvad. Adrabi Yevshe Shalai Bishtei Pregis Rekev, I'll pray to Achas Afar, the Nafish Lei Shi'ure. And now I have more. Okay, El Amarava, Hainatai Madrabi Shimon Sofa B'tchilaso. So the Gemara says, okay, abandon ship. Meaning, it was, what we try to do is we try to bring in this Brisa to show the consistency of Rabbi Shimon in his Bittul Berov analysis, and to which the Gemara now acknowledges, not here. Meaning, you might be right regarding the dissolved fetus coming out of the mother. You might be right over there, but that's not our explanation over here. Our explanation is going to be a different explanation. What we're going to do now is continue in the Gemara, obviously. We're going to give a totally different explanation regarding the Malo Tarvad Rekev, and then we'll come back to the fetus. You're not going to hear that word very often in the Gemara. It's a strange word. Gan gilon, Rashi says over here, bittul. Okay. In other words, like this. In order to get to this halach l'moshe m'Sinai of dissolved, let me not use the word dissolved, but right, decomposed human remains, it has to be, and again, this is part of the halacha Moshe Mishnah, it has to be pure, unadulterated human remains. And if I arrive at these human remains and it was in its decomposition mixed in with foreign matter, it doesn't get the status of Malo Rekev, Malo Tarvad Rekev. And so if that's true in terms of its decomposition, it'll be true even post decomposition. Where if after it's decomposed, it's mixed in with foreign matters, Rabbi Shimon would say, same story. It's no longer going to have the halacha of Malo Tarvad Rekev. Mayi detanyezu meisheish larekev, ezu meishein larekev. Nikvar arum. And here the Tosefta spells it out. It has to be where the body's buried with no clothing. Ba'aron shel shayish, in a box that's made up of marble. So that means that the casing that it's in, the coffin that it is in, experiences no decomposition. So the only thing decomposing is going to be the human remains. O al gabe ritzpah shel avanim, or on top of a stone floor. Zeh meisheish lo rekev, veizu meisheein lo rekev, nikbar b'ksuso. And what would be an example where it doesn't have this halacha of Malo Rekev Tarvad, where it's buried with its clothing, or in a wooden casket, where the wooden casket itself is going to go through decomposition, or it's buried on brick, and brick also disintegrates and mixes in with the human remains. And it's only going to be true regarding somebody who dies naturally. Somebody, however, who is killed, and when he's killed, he's going to be losing some of his blood. Right? Rashi writes, Lefisha Yatza Damo, Vichaser, Vikamel Mesechis Nazir, Meshachaser Ein La Rekev. This halacha l'Moshe Mesinai of Rekev, of decomposed body, of decomposed human remains, is only when the entire body decomposes and there was nothing missing prior to the decomposition. Okay. Again, all this is halacha l'Moshe Mesinai, so are we supposed to understand this? No. But these are the rules of Rekev, and they're very specific rules.
So one who was stabbed with a knife, this wouldn't work.
Yeah,
just
correct.
A natural death.
Correct. Correct.
Where somebody is missing a finger.
Right, would not have this.
Wouldn't count either.
Right, kufa malotar v'drekev shenafel asochah for kol shu tamei Rabbi Shimon Matar. The Gemara goes over this machlokus one more time, and I have malotar v'drekev where I have a little bit of dirt falls in after the decomposition. So the Tanakhama says it's still tamei, and Rabbi Shimon says it's tar. Malotar v'drekev shenisparzer bebayis habayis tamei. Rabbi Shimon Matahir. We're going to do this, the Braisa here that we're quoting is going to do this another way. Let's say it's no longer in the spoon, let's say it's spread out over the house. Still underneath the same roof, but it's spread out. The Tanakhama will tell you it's still Tame. Meaning, look, it's decomposed. The fact that it's spread out, not going to make a difference. And Rabbi Shimon says, no, now that it's spread out, it no longer gives off Tama. Utsricha, now the Gemara says, now, even though it's really the same point being repeated twice, they're both necessary. Why? Rabbi Shimon, I might have thought that even when the Tanakhama argues with Rabbi Shimon, and that if some dirt falls in, it's still going to give off Tuma, but that's only if it's still aggregated, if it's still collected in the spoon. But once it's spread out, I might have thought that he agrees with Rabbi Shimon. The ein mile v'chozer mile, because now we're going to have to basically add up each particle of the human remains together with one another. It's not collected together. The iash mina ba'abahamer amar Rabbi Shimon de ein mile v'chozer mile avabahayim amod lula rabbanan. And if all I had the case was the case of spreading out, I might have thought that that's where Rabbi Shimon argues with the Tanakhama. But had it been collected in a spoon, and even though there was a little bit of dirt mixed in, I might have thought that Rabbi Shimon agrees with the Tanakhama. Tanya Idach, the Gemara quotes another Braisa. Okay, and this is actually a Mishnah. Melo Tarved Va'od. If I have more than a spoonful, a little bit more than a spoonful, a Melo Tarved Va'od. Beis HaKvaros Tamei, Rabbi Shimon Mitahir. So, again, machlok is between the Tanakhama and Rabbi Shimon, and again, everyone's taking their position. My time, Adur Abban Lefishi Evshar, La Malot Tavid V'od Afar, Beis HaKvar She'im Bo Malot Tavid Rekev. Because if I went to the cemetery and I took a spoonful, not just a spoonful, but a heaping spoonful of the remains, I for sure have a Malot Tavid of human remains. Now, how exactly did this body become decomposed in the graveyard? So it's difficult to understand because as we got done saying not 10 lines ago in the Gemara, in order to get to this halacha of Melo Rekev, you need decomposition of the body and only the body. If we're in the graveyard, it would seem that we have some mixed in dirt during the decomposition process, and that's difficult. Okay, and it's difficult, and let's just leave it like that. Okay. Now we finished with this tangent, and that was a long tangent in the Gemara of Melo Rekev Tarvad. And the reason why we brought it in is because we thought that Rabbi Shimon would be consistent, meaning here is opinion regarding Shilya versus there in his opinion of Melo Rekev. But the Gemara said that there's no consistency. The two have nothing to do with one another. The Melo Rekev Tarvad is all about Tchilaso Kisofo, or Sofo Ketchilaso. Just like the decomposition has to be pure human remains, pure unadulterated human remains, so to even post decomposition, it's only going to give off Tumas Ohel if it's just pure unadulterated human remains. Okay, so that has nothing to do with our discussion. So let's go back to our discussion. Now we're talking about the fetus coming out of the body, and the fetus comes out and it disintegrates prior to its emergence. I'm Rav Yochanan Mishum Bittel Barov Naguba. So Rav Yochanan explaining Rabbi Shimon, it's Bittel, and not just Bittel, but it's Bittel Barov. Meaning I have more fluids of the mother that are coming out together with this disintegrated fetus. The disintegrated fetus only represents a minority of this mixture. It's batal. And here, the Gemara quotes Rav Yochanan, Rav Yochanan, Rabbi Shimon are saying the same thing. Rabbi Shimon Hadamar and Rabbi Shimon, we've already said, where the disintegrated fetus comes out of the mother, mixed in with the juices of all the other juices that are coming out of the mother, and that disintegrated fetus becomes batal. And Rabbi Lazar ben Yaakov, the Tanya, Rabbi Lazar ben Yaakov, Amar Behema Gasa, Sheshafa Chareras Dam, an animal that has a discharge, and it discharges a cake of blood. Harezetikaver, bury the cake of blood, uptur mina bechara. But from this point going forward, any baby that comes out of the mother, out of this animal, is not going to be a bechor. Now, v'tini Rabbi Chiyala, ino metama lo b'magav lo b'masa. And we have a braisa, and the braisa quotes in the name Rabbi Chiya, that does not give off tama, meaning this cake of blood won't give off tama's maga, won't give off tama's masa. O me acher she'ena matame lo b'maga v'lo b'basa mighty kaver. So, obvious question: if it's not giving off tama, is it that means it's not remains? So why are we burying it? So k'day lefarsama. She peturim in a bechora, because we want everyone to know, and the burial is going to indicate to everybody it gave birth. Now it doesn't give off tuma, but it's still a birth, and therefore mother now is a mivakeres. It's already now having had its first child. So that means now that anything that comes out of the mother next is not going to have the kedushas bechora and the halacha of bechor. Amar Vlad Malyahu v'amai Tani Rabbi Chiyena Matam Lo B'Magav Lo Masar. Amar Rav Yochanan Mishum Bitul B'Rav Nagoba. It's a cake of blood, and because it's a cake of blood, what is it? It's a mixture of the disintegrated fetus together with other juices and liquid of the mother, and so therefore Bitul B'Rav. Okay, now Amar Rabbi Ami Amar Rav Yochanan. Let's finish with this. Okay. As I mentioned from the beginning of the whole sugya, interestingly enough, even though it's the third parak of Nida, our Mishnah does not look at this from the perspective of the mother. Meaning the question that we can ask is a very simple question. Did mom give birth? Meaning, what we have been discussing now for the past 40, 50 minutes, we took a detour on the spoonful of dust, but what we've been talking about is this issuance of the mother, this discharge of the mother, is it tumas ohel? Is it the remains of a human body? I mean, it is, but la halacha, is the house tame? And our answer has been, according to Rabbi Shimon, no, bitul barov. Okay, did mom give birth? Meaning, is mom tamea leida? We haven't. Interestingly enough, the Mishnah did not discuss that. So now we're going to discuss it, and we're going to discuss it briefly. Amar Rabbi Ami, Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Amar Rabbi Shimon, she'ima tamei leida. Yes, mother is tamei leida. Amar usaba the Rabbi Ami, asbalach time of the Rabbi Yochanan, damar kra. And can we explain it? So the Gemara is going to give the following explanation. Ishaki says, Rabbi Yalda Zachar, the beginning of Parshas Tazria describes a woman giving birth. And first, Ishaki Sazria, she seminates. And she then, 9 months later, she gives birth. Why does the Torah give us the beginning of the conception process? Right, the Torah does not need to teach us about the birds and the bees. So why does the Torah start the story there? It's a halachic point. Even if what comes out looks like what comes in, and I know that's distasteful, but even if it comes out in a liquefied, disintegrated form, that's still considered birth. So afilo lo yalda elokin sheizria tamea leida. Okay, and that is an explanation of the halacha presented to us in the name of Yochanan, that even the Rabbi Shimon says that the matter that comes out of her is not tamea. She is considered as if she went through the birthing process, and she will be tamea. She'll be tamas leida. Right, it's an oddity. She gave birth. but what comes out of her is not registered as a fetus. Okay. Stop over here. Tomorrow we'll pick it up. Rabbi Chanan ben Akash Amar Tzachas Baruch Hu Zakh Sofiach Acher Bem Torah Mitzvot Shenema Anai Chafetz Amatzikol Yagil Torah Viyadir.